From Talking Mouths.
A while ago, I realized I wasn't going to finish a trail history in 2025. At the same time, I didn't want the year to end without producing at least one reasonably substantial episode for the podcast. The ideal solution was a simple one-on-one conversation that I could record and edit really quickly, with no need for music or sound effects or any of that other stuff I usually do. So, as the temperature dropped, I arranged for a nice fireside chat with someone who's very tuned in to the Yukon's current trail-building scene.
Anthony Beer, I'm director on the CMBC board, de facto, I guess, trails director. So I've been spearheading most of the trail maintenance things for the last 3 years.
How did you get, is sucked into it the right word? How did you get sucked into that?
Sucked in is probably the right word. I was volunteering as just a general member of CMBC doing trail grooming, and I wanted to do some trail projects, some construction projects, and the easiest way to do that seemed to be joining the board. And my good friend Jesse, who's the president, you know, he encouraged me to join because I was helping him out with the winter grooming.
How long have you been in the Yukon?
Coming up on 14 years.
And had you done trail building before you came here? Did you have experience?
No, I didn't have experience before coming to the Yukon. Just being a rider, was interested in seeing trails or connections in certain places. And I think the first trail that I built or was part of building was with CMBC, but when I was just a general member, and Scott Kesey was the trail director. I worked with Scott to plan out and build that trail. And that was just one I wanted to see get built.
Which trail was that?
It ended up being called Rippert, and it connected Upper Riverdale Trail to the start of RIP.
As trail director for CMBC, what does that involve?
There aren't any official duties, but I've been sort of coordinating and planning the schedule of the trail maintenance nights that we do, where we try and get the membership to come out and help do upgrades to trails or new trail construction projects. That's the bulk of it. And managing the equipment, making sure we have enough gear, making sure it's in good condition, liaising with the city, helping other individuals through the trail application process. So, you know, any sort of member of the public that wants to build a trail can approach CNBC with their idea, and we can walk them through a trail application and help them work with the city to get their plan realized in construction agreement. And then we can assist them with providing labor through those trail days, that sort of thing.
Are you on your own? Do you have kind of an informal committee that works with you?
Usually a sort of a subgroup of the board of directors plus a few other keen individuals will sit down a couple times in the late winter to sort of plan out what we want to see get done for the following season.
And are you getting applications or expressions of interest from potential builders year-round?
The city amended the trail development policy last year, and they want to see applications in the fall for the following year. So we're already past the deadline for next year. But that doesn't mean that something simple like a connector or extension can't get built. It just means a larger trail over 500 meters is probably not going to get built next year. If it hasn't already been submitted to the city. But we tend to get some people suggesting ideas, but not a lot of people proposing to build a trail. There is one trail being built right now that you might be aware of, which is it's a memorial trail for Amanda Taylor. CMBC isn't leading that one. The individual team on that trail worked with the city directly to plan it and figure it out. And CMBC has just signed on as a supporting role, lending some labor, lending some tools, that sort of thing.
And so there's a mix of things like that where you're supporting builder-led trails. And then how much is sort of like CMBC itself going, we really think there needs to be a new trail, or we need to put a ride around here, or we would like a little connector here. Is a lot of that internally driven by the club?
It's mostly internally driven, yeah. We're always happy to get recommendations and hear what people want to see built. And a few years back, CNBC did do some surveys. It's probably time to do that again. But over the past couple seasons, we've built We built a new trail between last year and this year. We built a small connector this summer, and we started in on another new trail project that still needs a substantial amount of work. So that's going to keep us pretty busy next season.
How hard is it to actually get, let's say, a trail that's more than 500 meters off the ground?
It's not terribly challenging, provided the trail is in a zone where city council is going to be supportive of it. So, you know, we now have a park on the Mount Mac side. We have a management plan on the Gray Mountain side. So that designates different types of use areas between sort of intensive use zones and zones that are set aside more so for conservation. So if you want to get a trail built, it should probably be in the intensive recreation zone of the Chadburn Lake area plan. Mount Mac is very new, but that said, there was already a trail approved that is being built currently that will fall within the Mount Mac Park. So that's one thing to understand is, you know, the trail needs to be on city land and it needs to be in a zone that's appropriate. City council has to approve it. So when you approach the parks department, they're going to work with the prospective builder on the details of the trail and get it to a place where they can recommend it to the city. And then they will take it to city council, present the plan, and give their support to it and the reasons why. And then city council has to vote. It's always helpful to actually go to the council meeting where they're hearing about the trail and take that opportunity to speak to them about it. It's a bit of a process. It can take some time. So you've got to be patient and plan ahead.
If the city ideally wants applications for new trails to be in by the fall, at what point does a decision come back? Is there a fixed timeline?
There's no fixed timeline. It can take a long time or a short amount of time just to get the, there's a coordinator within parks specifically for trails, and they're going to work with the applicant to get that application in a place where they can support it and take it to their manager. And once the application is acceptable to them and they think the trail is a good idea, then they're going to take it to city council. Council will hear about it at a regular council meeting, and then they will vote at the following council meeting on whether or not to approve the trail or not. So once it's heard by council, it's pretty quick. It can just take weeks to months to get the application to a place where the trail director at the city is supportive and happy with the application.
So it's like an iterative process. It's not like you put your application in and then, you know, you can't touch it, no one talks to you about it, and a decision comes back.
Yeah, absolutely. CMBC will help somebody get the application filled out and to the city, and we can even do that liaising with the city. But, you know, there are examples where CMBC is more or less just providing a supportive role and saying, you know, we support this trail concept and idea and we've talked to the builder about it, but the builder is more or less doing the application, submitting it to the city and working with the city directly.
I got out on my bike exactly once last season, and that was only to shorten the commute to the trailhead for a hike. So it doesn't even really count as a real mountain bike. But my wife was out a lot, and she would come back, and every day she would go, there is this thing here and there is this thing there. And some of them were off trails that I've built. And I'm like, that sounds really interesting. Somehow it still didn't motivate me to go out and look at it. But I'm curious, can you run through some of the highlights of the previous summer 2025 build season? What kind of things were accomplished out there?
The first thing that we got done this year was we finished a trail called Ollie's Trail. We were grooming it last winter, but the tread wasn't finished. So we started construction on that in 2024. We finished it in 2025. That connects from Rippert, essentially the opposite side from RIP, and it goes up to the Magnuson parking lot on the opposite side of the road. And the rationale, or the reason why I wanted to build this trail, and it was pretty selfish, was so that I had single track for climbing up to the Magnuson parking lot so that I didn't have to ride the road. And especially with riding with a dog. It's nice not to be on the road. So that was a pretty selfish trail. And it's named after my now deceased dog. It could use some tweaking, but people are riding it and appreciating it, I think.
Interestingly enough, there was a single track way to get up to the Magnuson parking lot. And that was my selfish endeavor, called Boogaloo.
We built a short climbing reroute on Boogaloo Heights. The last sort of section on Boogaloo Heights as you climb up towards Magnuson Green is really steep. And a few years ago, somebody did build a drop on that section of trail. They just went out and built it. They didn't ask anyone. So that was removed. But the intention with that new climbing section, that it avoids that steep bit, is that we could put a couple technical trail features on that steep section of Boogaloo Heights. And then we've connected that to an old trail that was an unsanctioned trail off of Magnuson Green. And we've extended that top and bottom. And there was a really big double jump on that trail with a wooden transition. And so we removed that with the help of Rob McConnell and Devin Knopf from Icicle. They built a large wooden on-off feature. So jump on, drop off. And we're refurbishing some of the old jumps that were on that trail, and we have plans to put in more next summer. There's a rough tread in there from top to bottom, but it needs lots of massaging. And the idea is that it's going to be more of like a flowy trail. So it takes a lot more time to build a flow trail than it does to just put in a raw single track trail, because we're really trying to make smooth arcing turns. We're taking out a lot of roots. We're moving a lot of dirt to sort of build up corner support and make it sort of a really fast and smooth type of tread. So yeah, we've got a lot of work to do, but we've got a good start.
Find that interesting that there was effort put into building a new up track on Boogaloo Heights, because by the time we got around to building Boogaloo Heights, the idea of any part of Boogaloo being an up track had been completely abandoned. But I'm assuming what's happening is, because of Goatee and the Dream Trail now, that's being used as a quick way to get up to the swamp and then into Goatee and up to the Dream Trail. Is that kind of how that's being used?
I don't have statistics, but my sense is that, you know, of all the trails that are downhill primary, but also because of the rules that we work within, all trails have to be all user multi-direction. So I think Boogaloo Heights is probably the downhill primary trail that sees the most uphill traffic, whether it's hikers or bikers. And yeah, just like you said, it's people taking the most direct route to Goatee to get to the Dream Trail, whether they're snowshoeing, running, hiking, biking. So the idea behind this new trail is also to give people something that's really compelling as a down track back to the parking lot, so that there's less downhill traffic on Heights and it becomes a more uphill dominant trail. People are still going to ride down it, especially since you want to connect to Upper Boogaloo. But I find that the new trail will be enough fun that I'm happy to ride down it all the way to the parking lot and climb back up to Upper Boogaloo to continue on if that's where I want to go.
What's going on with the Dream Trail? I'm sure people are curious to know about that, if you know.
We can deviate from 2025 construction to the Dream Trail. So not much has gone on with the Dream Trail in a few years, but a CNBC member did approach the board earlier this year to ask about the Dream Trail, and we are in conversation with Joseph DeGraff, who is one of the longtime builders on that project and general trail builder around the Yukon. He's been doing a lot of work up in Dawson over the past couple summers, but you know, he lives in Whitehorse. He's interested in work in Whitehorse, and we're in the process of putting together an application for the Dream Trail. That said, that doesn't mean we're going to be doing any construction next year. It means that we hope to get an application in next year. And once we have that application, we'll then have to seek funding to hire a contractor, likely Joe. And he may hire employees or use subcontractors, but the plan is for Joe to lead the finishing of the Dream Trail. And there's about another 2.5 kilometers from where the Dream Trail ends to the end of the Gray Mountain Summit Trail, which people will know is the trail that you use to get to Money Shot. Part of the application will be to upgrade sections of the Great Mountain Summit Trail to have an official biking route as well. So at this point, we're working on an application to hopefully see construction start in 2027.
And what kind of things are you hearing about the Dream Trail? I mean, I think it's fantastic. I love it.
Yeah, I think people enjoy riding it. I think people from out of the territory are hearing about it and going to ride it. I'm also hearing that sometimes people get a little bit lost up there because they think that there is a continuous trail that runs from the Summit Trail to the Dream Trail. We made a change on Trail Forks this summer because Trail Forks was showing that it was connected, but it isn't. So I think that was part of the problem. But I think the people that do ride the bike-specific constructed sections of it are really enjoying that trail and that access to that alpine terrain.
If you're a mountain biker, especially a downhill type mountain biker, I think you've got to be asking the question, like, what about other trails going off the Dream Trail back down Gray Mountain?
All that land is within city limits, so it's all stuff that would need trail applications through the city to build on that land. I don't see why we couldn't explore those options. Getting the trail done first is a big endeavor, so that's what we're thinking about right now. But I mean, yes, I've definitely thought of that. Like, there must be opportunities for other trails, just like Money Shot out of the Alpine.
Just putting the bug in Burbage's ear, because I know he's got his eye in that whole area. So and as far as I know, he's maybe not done with trail building. So
even the connection to the top of Mother T was a huge advantage of putting the Dream Trail in. And I also think that there are things that could be done to Mother T as well. It could use some love. There's lots of places where stuff could be done. There's some really off-camber sections with corners that don't have any support and stuff like that. Or some of the upper section is really fighting through willows, and there might be opportunities to reroute sections out of the willows, or I'm not sure, but yeah, I definitely think we could improve on that.
This seems like a good moment to pause and make a small confession. For the last 16 minutes and 41 seconds, Colin McCann has been sitting quietly next to Anthony on the couch. We're actually in Colin's house, drinking Colin's tap water, because we couldn't find any beer in Colin's fridge. Anthony suggested we record our interview in a proper podcast studio. However, I thought it would be a lot more fun to stage a home invasion with my mobile studio. How random is it that we chose the house of CNBC's most famous multi-tool? Pretty random, if you ask me. Fortunately, there were two of us, and Colin's a little older, so he was relatively easy to subdue. At this point, I remove the gag and zip ties and thank Colin for not disrupting the preceding discussion with all of that noisy grunting you typically expect from people who've been gagged. In my defense, Colin was not forced to wear the gag. He actually requested it after concluding that it was probably the only way he could refrain from interrupting while I talked to Anthony. I should also clarify that there is actually no fireplace or wood stove in this room of Colin's house, just an old baseboard heater. The sound of the flames is from our effort to warm the space up by burning pieces of Colin's back door in a metal trash can. After offering Colin a few seconds to catch his breath, Anthony and I include him in the rest of our conversation. Here it is. My understanding, Colin, is you play a special role in the trail building.
Well, I definitely like the celebration part, but I also like to recognize the efforts people put in. I certainly don't have the muscle or stamina these days to swing an axe or a Pulaski all day, but recognizing those trail achievements are pretty important to me. So I only sit as a multi-tool right now, but I think with the skill sets and the experiences that I have, that part is important to me. Getting the media on it and getting photos taken and recognizing the people that put the effort in.
So explain to me what the multi-tool is and in particular how that's different from being just a regular tool.
So I don't get a vote, and that's okay. It's a progression position where if you're a volunteer and you want to, you know, be involved, you have the opportunity to come to meetings and voice your concerns, voice your projects and bring some experience. It helps the board make decisions. So I originally started as just a volunteer, and then became a non-boating multi-tool who just helped out with whatever was going on. And then I became a director, and then I became a vice president, and then I became a president. And then I left, and now I'm back just to help support these guys in their new objectives with the new board. There's no same members that are on the board that I was on back then. So
I don't know anything about the building community anymore. Is there a solid core of people who are coming out? Is it the same faces all the time? Do you really need to put a message out there in terms of encouraging new people to come out and get involved? Like, what's the responsibility as a rider to get involved in trail building or trail maintenance or something, to put your hand on a tool at some point?
Well, I think this is a big debate in within CNBC and within the riding community, or maybe people aren't debating it, but nobody is obliged. We're just volunteers out there trying to improve the rider experience. And a lot of the trails, as you know, are, I mean, that's what your podcast is about. It's about passionate individuals who took it upon themselves to go build these trails. And people tend to do that for a period of a few years when they're really into it, and then they move on to other things. So Whitehorse really relied on those passionate individuals to build our mountain biking network. But it's not a sustainable model, in my opinion. That's one of the reasons I got involved with CNBC, was to try and sort of build more community engagement around trail work. But we aren't getting huge turnouts consistently. It is a lot of the same faces coming out, but the groups are most of the time relatively small. And our membership also tells us that people aren't buying memberships to support trail work and trail maintenance. Most of our members are buying memberships to participate in things like skills clinics, group rides, and those sorts of things. I think CNBC has to do a better job of advertising, but maybe we also need to consider changing the model. I'm not quite sure what that is.
It's very difficult to have sustained energy when it seems like it's mostly board members that are doing the work, and like very few individuals who come and grab a project and want to go ahead with the project. So having a board that turns over every year, and then the vision kind of changes. They come for a reason, of course. They want to give back to their community, but the cycling community, and want to find out more about what we do. And they bring a lot to the board. But if they happen to leave, then some of that momentum is gone. So there are models out there, like the Carcross Single Track to Success, that is a sustained work project that they can have a 10-year vision of what they want to build and what they want to do. And it's proven successful. And same with the Dawson stuff. The city is on board with paying for contractors to come in and build. There's so many bikers here that it does hurt a bit that there's, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 mountain bikers here, if not more. And our community is still growing. And some people just want to pay for trails to the club. Some people just want to ride after work and just they expect it. And then some people want to come out and support, and whether that's a board position or it's a, you know, they want to help with fundraising or they want to help with events. It's just an ever changing cycle inside of CNBC that it makes it hard to sustain this stuff. So Anthony's been here for 3 years, and the progress he's made is phenomenal. But if he leaves, what happens to the vision of that? Is it going to be embedded with the rest of the board or with their strategic planning? It's hard for them to grasp when you lost your lead, if your lead decides to leave, right? So, and the same thing was with Kesey, and same thing was with Burbage when they were trail leads. They had big projects in mind and we got them done, and then they were satisfied and they moved on to other things in life. So it's hard to sustain. So Anthony's 100% right. The model has been a bunch of little bits and pieces as we go along. When you guys were doing it, for lack of a better word, you had nothing better to do, so you just went out and did it, right? And you had a core group of guys that were doing it with you, and now it's bits and pieces of people that are putting in, but sustaining that is very difficult, I've seen over the years with CNBC.
I haven't talked to any builders from early on, for lack of a better term, let's say the rogue trail building days, who regrets doing that. But I, at the same time, I don't know anybody who doesn't think that the system we have now is better, that, for lack of a better term, like the free entry system under which we thought we all operated back then is rightfully a thing of the past and things need to be more organized. But I wonder if at the same time, that affects it as well, because there was that freedom to kind of just go out and do whatever you wanted. And it really did give you a sense of ownership over it.
We've seen quite a few projects come to us that people want to grab something and go. And either they've talked to the city and the city said, go talk to CNBC, or someone brought it to a CNBC member and said, hey, there's a guy that wants to, you know, revamp this or take care of that. And then CNBC has great vision of how we can get there within the rules, within the parameters, within the policies, within the everything, and with the resources that we have and the partnerships that we have, but they just want to go and do it themselves, right? They just want to go and do it themselves, and then it falls off. So there's a trail up there right now that's a huge liability. There's somebody offered to rebuild it, but it had to fall within the proper parameters. So the guys that wanted to do it, that fell off. And it's unfortunate, but that we don't have the ability to just say, let someone go ahead and do it. But at the same time, is, you know, you have to have some sort of standard and risk assessment done, right? So people don't want to build cross-country trails anymore. They want to build something rad to make edits on.
Cross-country trails are rad. To that person who's like, whether they've just moved to Whitehorse or they've been here for a while, but they're like completely engaged with our trails, like mountain biking is a core part of their life, but you've never seen them out at a trail night. Like, what's your pitch to get them to come out?
I don't think that I necessarily want to pitch come to the trail nights. I would say to that person, if you support what CNBC is doing, please buy a membership. But I think that CNBC needs to do a better job of advertising.
Part of our marketing strategy that's been lost is gaining sponsorship, getting our name on the trail signposts. When you go to Burns Lake, they ask and they promote the bike shops and they promote themselves and promote asking for money. And if you like exactly what Anthony said, if you like it, then contribute. We don't have any of that selling out in the network right now. You can actually ride a trail without seeing a single solitary map or signage, even saying the city of Whitehorse. So there's opportunity out there for us to grab people, but the passive grabbing people may be better guilt tripping than, you know, us having to say, hey, you got your membership? Hey, you got your membership? Hey, you got your membership? And they go, no, I've lived here 20 years. I don't have a membership. Why would I have a membership? I can just ride.
How much is a membership?
It was $25 in 2025. It's going up to $40 next year.
Some people may perceive, and this might be my perception, like the membership for something like CNBC is usually like for people who want to go in events. But what you're saying is if you don't want to come out and build trails or work on maintenance nights, and maybe even if you're not into those events, buying a membership to CNBC, some of that money goes directly back into the trails that we all of you still ride.
Walkers too, though.
Yes.
They're all non-motorized multi-use trails. That's part of the caveat of being a trail steward. So for any of the trails, contributing to CNBC is definitely a big way to keep them maintained, keep them brushed back, keep the trees off them, fix the corners, fix the washouts, all that sort of stuff. So yeah.
Other than the cross country ski club, which maintains and builds some other trails, like all the trails that we mountain bike on are multi-use trails, but no other organization, CNBC is kind of alone in terms of actually being active on these trails that benefit everybody.
Yeah, other than the city of Whitehorse, of course.
In the KSA.
Yeah.
The Klondike Snowmobile Association.
For some of them. Certainly not like, let's say, Grey Mountain mountain biking trails.
On that note, though, is the KSA is able to groom some of those areas. Just by the nature of the beast, the old ski trails are wide enough that snowmobiles can get on there to groom.
Bringing up grooming is a good point, too. Those membership funds, they also go to purchasing the groomers, paying for the gas, the cost for when they break down, for fixing them for parts. And, you know, I know that walkers definitely use the trails that we groom in winter and appreciate the grooming. That is a significant expense for CNBC, is just maintaining the groom network of single track.
And huge reward for the community, big time.
And I know, you know, we're not offering the same level of service as the ski club, but in 2025, it's, you know, it's a $25 membership, not a $300-some-odd membership. And we just, you know, it's all volunteer-based. And with mountain bike grooming, you need to groom after it snows, but once the trails get packed and ridden in, it's not like skiing where you need to continuously reset that corduroy. Once the snow falls, it's packed, it's good to go. You don't need to do it until the snow falls again. So we don't really have a grooming schedule. It's as needed. And, you know, people are away, that we're all volunteers with full-time jobs and families or whatever, so we can't always get to it right away. That is a challenge, but we're trying to recruit more volunteers who do want to do the grooming itself. And we have purchased another machine, and I think we'll be looking to get another one next year as well to try and increase the quality of the grooming product that we're offering.
And you're grooming where? You're grooming on Gray Mountain? You're grooming at Mount Mac? Do you do the grooming for this, like the bike trails at Mount Mac?
Yeah, those are CNBC volunteers and with a CNBC machine. We do support some other individuals with funds to do some grooming with their own equipment. So the Birch Loop in Crestview gets groomed by a volunteer and a CNBC member. We try to support people who are interested in grooming their own trails that way. So if somebody has trails in their neighborhood and they want to get out and groom them, they're welcome to contact CNBC and see how we can help them. I think CNBC is in this growing pains. I like to say that the Yukon is like Southern Canada 20 years ago. Like we're 20 years behind in many things. And like you said, people think I buy a CNBC membership because I want to participate in an event. And it's true. CNBC was very much event-based for a long time. I always had that trail steward piece. But, you know, over the last 5 years or so, events have really fallen off, not really doing the races anymore. CAY is generally handling racing and events like that. So, yeah, I think we're in this growing pain period where we maybe need to rebrand, and we also need to figure out how to become an organization that is more focused on trails and that people know that. I'm not entirely sure how we make that transition, but we recognize that a lot of people don't really see CNBC that way.
I go through this all the time with the ski club. I've been a member for many, many years. I don't care about anything other than the trails. I don't go to the chalet, really. I don't go in events. None of that stuff matters to me, the ski programs. At the end of the day, different people have different priorities, and a lot of people are into all of that. But the fundamental thing that every single skier has in common is the trail. For an organization like that, that should be first and foremost what they're about. All those other things are nice. But at the end of the day, really, the thing that we all have in common is the trails.
The big difference is there is the paid staff at the Mount Mac for skiing, like just for skiing in the comparison. Look how much trails we have under our banner at CNBC that is all done without paid staff. All of it. Besides the stuff the city takes care of, like the bridges and the features and the engineering stuff, it's substantial. Yes, we do have a grant from the city to help us with that, like the funding and stuff, but compare budgets. And I don't have a problem either with the ski club. I think it's great. It's a world-class venue, right? The product you're getting there is every day significant number of kilometers to ski. And then in the summertime here, you can ride everywhere. And most of the time in winter, most of the winter trails that we're grooming are a very good bike ride. It's not a short little stint of a bike ride. And that's all done by volunteers. So it costs money. What if we had paid staff?
Yeah, I think what I've learned over the last three seasons of doing this, and each season has represented another ratchet up and sort of the level of effort we've been putting into the trail nights. We had 12 in 2025. And so, you know, that takes a lot of organizational hours from our board members to pull off. And I no longer think that's where we should be putting our time. Maybe having a paid executive director and somebody to be able to devote a good amount of time to planning and organizing, and maybe we end up running a seasonal paid crew like the single track to success model of people doing trail maintenance, and even seek funding to bring in professional trail builders for targeted projects. So like Colin said, we had somebody approach us and say, hey, I'm a professional trail builder. You know, I'm from the Yukon. I work all over Canada building bike parks. And, you know, this is somebody who's built in Whistler Bike Park, said, I want to build a bike park. Like, I'll donate my time to see it happen. And we're just like, no, we don't have the capacity to to figure that out right now.
Yeah, the project management.
We had a high school students from FH say, we want to get a pump track or some dirt jumps built at FH. And again, we were like, we're happy to provide a letter of support, but like, we can't lead that project for you. We can't help you with that. Because again, we're just 100% volunteers of full-time jobs. So I think, again, it's that growing pain moving from this total volunteer board to figuring out how to get more funding to actually pay somebody to do this kind of stuff.
Those 12 trail nights a year, are you personally on site for most of those?
Most of them, yeah.
I was at one and I brought the trailer.
I wasn't at any.
And I probably put at least the same amount of time into sort of walking trails outside of those trail nights, flagging lines, moving deadfall, and talking to people, planning. There's way more outside of that.
And not just you. The sponsorship team tries to go out and get sponsorship for them so we can offer prizes, incentives, and engagement opportunities for media engagement. And there's a lot that goes into it, boy, that's for sure.
And local businesses stepped up. They were great giving us money for prizes and stuff at those trail nights. So, you know, we had like 10 sponsors.
And if you don't have those, it's even less incentive for people's next year to come and do it. So the consistency of the product is what helps it grow, but sustained growth is very difficult with a volunteer organization.
And I'm assuming that if Scott Kesey left a legacy at all with CNBC in his former capacity as trail director, if there's a beer sponsor, no one is cracking those beers until all the trail work is done and the tools are safely put away, correct?
Yep. Yep. I don't think we even have beer.
Oh.
Yeah, we
there don't. There you go. You've just shot the marketing plan down there, right there.
The marketing plan's done.
But I mean, UConn Brewing is supporting us, and we have had near beer on trail days.
Oh, we did? Okay, good.
It can be fun, really fun building trails, and you bond with the people you're working with.
Yeah.
It is a ton of fun. And at the end of the day, you have something you can look back on and be really proud of. Riding a trail that you've had a hand in is very different than riding a trail you haven't. And that never goes away. That connection never goes away.
I remember every tree that I've cut down that's been on the trail. And I remember every little dirt berm that I helped make. I don't really know how to make trails, but when I do go and help, I remember every little section that I made or my son made, and the bonds that we're creating now with the people. We want that relationship to be with CNBC. It doesn't matter who's out. We want that relationship. And I'm sure people are making friends.
Go listen to Scott Kesey's episode, The South Boss Story. Scott really drives that point home. At the end of the piece, he really talks a lot about just the friendships he made out of building Southpaw. And it's really kind of touching.
But we miss your podcast. Everyone does. Everyone will be listening.
And I appreciate them because they tell that story about how these trails were all built by passionate individuals. Mm-hmm. They all have unique character. And I think that's great. And I'm not in saying that CNBC needs to grow to some sort of more professional sort of organization. I'm not saying that like that model should disappear. Like, I think it's still great that people want to build trails, and they should. And, you know, rogue trail building will never go away either. There are still people building rogue trails, but we won't talk about that.
That's for another podcast.
Well, we can talk about the one thing, the rogue trail that went off a goatee ultimately has been turned into a sanctioned trail that's pretty fantastic. And by the sounds of it, hopefully if you guys do your work, the groundwork will be laid to finish that trail. And that's going to be a huge, huge feather in Whitehorse's cap in terms of mountain biking, I think.
A lot of rogue trails ended up getting adopted into the network. So yeah, they started rogue, but they ended up getting the official stamp in the end. It's not a model that we're encouraging.
That concludes our programming for the year. I'll be back in early 2026 with a couple of short pieces fabricated from archival material. I'm also working on a new batch of trail histories that I hope to start releasing in the spring, so stay tuned. Thanks for listening.